Hello, and welcome to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is our show, Is Abled. And our topic for this series is learning disabilities. We're also working with a friend of mine, colleague of mine, Linda Price, and she is a former professor at Temple University, and that's where I worked with Linda on several different projects, summer projects, and got to know Philadelphia and where to go in Philadelphia and where not to go in Philadelphia. And also, what we're really trying to talk about in this series on learning disabilities is to kind of bring it into the light a little bit. We're also looking at specifically learning disability issues that pertain to adolescents and adults, young adults, when they are getting ready to be employed and go out into the world and develop relationships. And because learning disabilities is an invisible disability, it's not like having something written on your forehead that says learning disability person. It needs to be discussed. And so, also I want to mention that, Dr. Linda Price has a website that you can get into called littleoldladyprofessor.org or com.
Com.
Okay. littleoldladyprofessor.com. And there's lots of good information on that, and you can communicate directly through email and with Linda on that. So with that said, let's go ahead and get started. And Linda, tell me this. We talk a lot about accommodations for persons with learning disabilities and persons with disabilities. But can you talk about some of the kinds of accommodations that people without disabilities use every day in their job?
Absolutely, Steve. And what's interesting to me is that when we talk about learning disabilities and dyslexia, we're talking about two sides of the same coin. One side of the coin is the actual disability itself. So we've talked about that in our previous broadcast. And then if you flip the coin over, the other side is, what do you do about that? What are the accommodations? And what's fascinating to me is, Steve, you and I, this ain't our first rodeo. We've been around for a while.
Right.
And the term accommodations, always kind of seemed kind of technical and professional, and it was almost like a medical term. Well, now in the 21st century, everybody uses accommodations. Everybody. And it's interesting because I found a study that said, for example, that over 75% of the American population either use glasses or contacts at some time or another.
Sure.
Now, that's the simplest accommodation that you can possibly have. People that have visual impairments, they typically use like large print. Maybe they use like a talking computer. The old standby is Braille. But the bottom line is, those are all accommodations. But now, accommodations have kind of become such an everyday part of our society that we all use them, and we don't even think about it. For example, I was playing on the internet, and I looked up, like, everybody's got a smartphone now, right, Steve?
Right.
Everybody.
I have a smarter phone. It's smarter than me.
Well, we would assume that, yours would be the smartest phone of all.
Yes.
We would assume that. But the thing is, that's really, to me, the symbol of the 21st century is everybody's on their phone all the time. There are accommodations that are built into smartphones. that people just take for granted. For example, we in any kind of a smartphone, there is either a visual or a vibration alert. So if you're waiting for a phone call, let's say you're going into your church or your synagogue, maybe you're going in to have dinner with friends and you turn your phone off, you leave the vibration on so that you will know that somebody's trying to get a hold of you. That's an accommodation. People like me that are a little bit older that need a slightly larger text, we can zoom the text. We can make it larger. That's an accommodation. My favorite, which a lot of people do and don't even think about anymore, is the whole idea of dictating into your phone.
Yes, and I think
that's another example.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, when you get that vibration in church, that actually is a sign that God is telling you to turn off the football game and to listen to the sermon. But
you would think.
The other thing I think is really important, and like you said, this is not our first rodeo. The kinds of accommodations that persons with a lot of sensory types of disabilities and learning disabilities too, the price has gone down on things just immeasurably. I mean, looking at text that you don't have to read that is read for you on your telephone, or that if you want to send a message to somebody, you can send it with your voice, and it'll convert it into text. You know, I mean, I know this has to do with sensory, but I remember when a Kurzweil reading machine, you know, used to cost, you know, $20,000-$30,000. They might have had one in a major library in a major city, and now. You can get the same thing over your telephone. Almost, you can you can scan it and can read it and everything. So let's say that why don't we just work it through this way? Let's say that a person is going to go and apply for a job. A person with a learning disability is going to go and apply for a job. And so let's work through that whole process. The first thing that they need to do is apply for the job and to go in and do that. What are some accommodations, or what are some things that a person with a learning disability might use in that beginning process?
Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to give you just a teeny tiny backstory with that, so that people have a little bit of background on it. When you and I talk about accommodations, we talk about compensating. Literally, that's the definition. So that means that somebody has something that they need to compensate for. Now, remember, again, when we're talking about disabilities, that moves into the legal arena. And then when we talk about accommodations, we talk about equal access, or people being able to basically have barriers removed. So basically, the accommodations that you and I just talked about, like your phone buzzing, that's an everyday thing everybody uses. That's to compensate for the fact that you don't have your phone turned on, the volume is not turned on. But when we get into the area of applying for a job, looking for housing, trying to go back to school, trying to get accommodations, if you have a disability, then we move into that legal aspect. And you and I have talked a bunch, and I don't know how we're going to approach this because it's literally another whole series of broadcasts that about the laws. There are two laws that specifically apply to adolescents and adults with learning disabilities and dyslexia. One is the Americans with Disabilities Act, and one is Section 504 of the Vocational Rehabilitation Act. Both of those laws, which are federal laws, which are also, by the way, supported by state laws, both of those laws specifically deal with equal access. And so when you go to, let's think of a job. I don't know. Think of a job somebody would apply for, Steve. Give me a job.
A receptionist.
Okay. So this is someone with a learning disability that also has dyslexia, and she wants to go and apply to be a receptionist. And so what would happen is, first of all, she cannot ask for accommodations unless she talks about her dyslexia and unless she talks about the law. So she has a choice. This is why learning disabilities are slightly different than maybe some other kinds of sensory or physical disabilities. If somebody walks in, let's give her a name. Let's call her Valerie. Valerie walks in and she's got a guide dog with her. To apply for a receptionist job, right away, the person that's doing the interviewing is going to say, okay, Valerie is blind or Valerie has a visual impairment. And they then will start thinking along one stream of thought. Let's say, however, Valerie has dyslexia and she goes in and she looks just like all the other 17 girls that are waiting in the hallway to get, you know, to apply for the the job.
17 other girls or men that might be applying for the job.
I was just going to say, maybe we should be less sexist.
Yeah, maybe it should be okay. Valerie or Val something.
Let's
you know.
Say Val. I like Val better.
Yeah, there we go.
So, and Val is gorgeous. Okay, I'm thinking in my mind, Val is a gorgeous young man that goes in to apply for the receptionist job. How's that?
There we go. We're good.
Is that good? Okay.
We're good.
So Val goes in, and he right away says he's applying for this job along with the 17 other people that are waiting in the hallway. And he is basically at a crossroads. He can either say, hi, my name is Val. Here's my resume. This is what I can do. And I have dyslexia. So he can open that door. Or he can keep his mouth shut and go ahead and say, hi, my name is Val. I'm applying for this job. Here's my resume. And literally not say anything about needing accommodations. Now that's where the rubber hits the road, because the accommodations that he might need because of his dyslexia, for example, is he might need extra time to read documents. He's a fine reader. He, you know, his reading skills are appropriate, but because of his decoding skills, he has to slow down when he reads. He has to maybe be in a quiet place where he can read what's being sent to him. So if part of the job being the receptionist is that he has to screen emails, he's going to have to either ask for an accommodation for extra time, or he's going to keep his mouth shut and try to do the best he can without the accommodation.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. That's interesting. Of course, we are doing this interview, and Linda's on a cell phone, so sometimes there's a little lag in there in time, and I tend to talk over people, so I have to be careful about that. But you're right. I think that, those kinds of things, I think it's very difficult for a person to determine at which point to disclose that you may. I mean, if you come up to an employer right off the bat and say, "I'm going to need more time during the day to do this task," that may be a turnoff, or that may cause you to lose the job right away. Yet you do have obviously legal rights, but I think a person has to kind of play it by ear a little bit as to when you disclose that information. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. But the interesting thing about accommodations is that you can have all kinds of accommodations, and some of them would be accommodations that anybody could ask for. So let's say, for example, Val goes in and he says, what is the job description? And the person says, well, you're going to have to announce people. This is a law office, and they're going to come in, and they're going to ask you to, you have to take down some of their information, and then you're going to need to call one of the lawyers and announce that this person is waiting for an appointment. Because of Val's dyslexia, he may also have some problems with auditory discrimination. And so it would be very easy for Val, and he wouldn't even really need to ask for this accommodation. When somebody comes in and they say, hi, my name is Susie Sunshine. I'm here. I need to see the lawyer. And Val would say, oh, what is your name? And the person would say, oh, my name is Susie Sunshine. So they would repeat it, and Val would write it down. And he would use a couple, like, key clarifying questions just to get that person's information down before he would call the lawyer. Now, that is a super simple accommodation. It doesn't cost a dime. It's very unobtrusive. Nobody even knows that it happened. But what it did is it accommodated for Val's dyslexia and also for his auditory discrimination.
And I think we need to also stress at this point, when you're looking at accommodations for any type of disability, the vast majority of the accommodations are very inexpensive, very inexpensive. And I think that's one of the things that the, you know, that the employer is going to say, oh, my gosh, what's this going to cost me? You know, when I worked for the federal government under, and I use a wheelchair, I needed a desk that was higher. So we went down and got four blocks of wood and set them underneath the desk. You know, total cost just about nothing. Somebody to cut the wood. Mm-hmm. That was it. And I think that let's just even go through, you know, one of the things that I think that happens with persons with learning disabilities. It's kind of like when I looked at my entire dissertation that I did for my doctorate, you know, it's overwhelming. You look at this, you know, orals and your written part and everything. But when you break it down and you first of all get your idea, you make sure that it's workable, that you've got questions you can ask, then you go on to the next part. And the same thing when I work with grad students. So I think sometimes, let's say if we're working with Val or Valerie on that job, that one of the things, some of the things that we could do that would be very, very inexpensive would be to, instead of giving the person a really large assignment, we could break it down. First of all, take this pile of mailers and put addresses on them. Then you take them there here, and it, you know, so that's one thing you could do. One of the things that I use myself, and my wife uses herself, is a timer again on the old telephone. Let's say that the receptionist needs to at 10 o'clock go down and get the office mail and distribute it through the office. So you can, that's what you would do. You would set your timer. You would at 10 o'clock or five before 10 o'clock or something, it rings. And that's your cue that you need to go ahead and do another task. Linda, why don't you talk about this? Because I think this is just something that, again, probably 90% of us use, but is very useful for a person with a learning disability, and that's a checklist, you know? You know, a checklist of assignments.
Well, and I think, first of all, I want to get the plug in before we run out of time, because you and I both absolutely love this site. It's called the Job Accommodation Network, J-A-N, Jan.
Right.
And no matter what political orientation your listeners are, I think they could look at Jan on the internet and say that it's your federal dollars well spent.
I agree.
This is not, you know, gold toilet seats or, you know, any of that crazy stuff we all get upset about. Jan has, without a doubt, the most inclusive list of accommodations and materials. And they even have, this is so totally cool, they even have like real life people you can call and you can talk with them about what kinds of accommodations you need, how this fits in the workplace. the whole focus of Jan, which I dearly love, Steve, is that it is set up to make it easier for employers to work with people with disabilities. In my heart, because I'm an optimist, I want to believe that employers want to employ people with disabilities. I believe if they have the choice that they would do that. But there's this huge gap in the United States because they don't know how to do it. And Jan is a really good way to approach that. There's all, like, let me give you a list of some of these accommodations. Now, these are not only for learning disabilities, but these are for all kinds of disabilities. Natural lighting, extra time for assignments or projects, noise-canceling headphones or a quiet place, screen readers, voice recognition technology, accessible bathrooms, using a tape recorder or a scribe during meetings, clarifying or simplifying written directions. So, for example, on clarifying written directions, one of the employers that I talked to many years ago did this incredibly simple thing for his whole staff, but he did it for his employee with learning disabilities. The person was not able to always follow what the schedule was every week in this workplace. And so the employer literally made a schedule. So he would write up a schedule, what work needed to be done and what the deadlines were for each day. He wrote it down. He passed it out to every employee in that small company. And it was specifically set for the person with learning disabilities to help with time management. But all of the employees loved it because, I mean, wouldn't it be great to come in Monday morning and you know right away what's expected of you for the week?
And I think that that's really another kind of a point that you made here that I think is really important, is that the accommodations that you provide generally help everybody in the workplace. And
absolutely,
you know, like you say, it would be, and I use that with a graduate student, almost like an agenda of the day of when the graduate student came in and did certain tasks for me. I made a list of that. The other thing that I think is so important is that if you, and this works for me too, if I make a checklist of things I need to do during the day, if I can cross them off, I feel like I've made progress. And what are some other things?
Absolutely. Well, you would laugh because when I was a young professor, didn't know anything at all that I was doing.
A couple years ago, yes.
3 years ago, I had a woman, a young woman, who had a fairly significant hearing impairment in my class. And you know me, I love to talk a lot. And she came up to me after class and she said, "Dr. Price, could I get a copy of your lecture notes? Because you talked very quickly." And she said, "I'm trying to lip read and I can't always follow exactly what you're saying." So I thought, yeah, this is kind of a pain in the tuchus, but, you know, I'll make a copy and I'll give it to her. So I gave it to her, and three of the other students said, "Oh, my God, we want those notes." So I ended up making copies of my lecture notes every week before when I would do the class, and I would pass those out if people wanted them. And that was a perfect example of how what she had originally asked for as a legitimate accommodation, giving her hearing impairment, was something that all the kids loved. And Steve, I could tell you honestly, I think their grades were better after I started giving them those lecture notes.
You know, I think that's true.
And I really do.
And it's interesting because in my in the graduate classes that I taught, and I did have some students with hearing impairments and other students who were visually impaired and could not see things that I put on PowerPoint or things that I, you know, I gave them copies of the PowerPoint that they could convert. But I also found out students in class, I could see students in class that were the best note takers, you know. And I just simply asked them, I said, would you mind making an extra copy of your notes? And, you know, there was, I mean, if they had a copy of my notes in class, they would wonder if I came to class. Some people are really very detailed and also mm-hmm. know how to do notes almost in a system that's very easy. And I think you're right. So I think a lot of those kinds of things are really helpful for everybody. And people, doggone it, people like to help. They really do. I never found a time when the students, there were other students in my class that wanted to help or were willing to study with the person. Another thing that I used in my classes that I use not so specifically for learning disabilities, but for, you know, all students, was really and this could be used in an employment situation, was simply a calendar of due dates and things during the week that we did on, you know, on Fridays we had time to share, on Fridays we had time for questions, so that everybody knew what was going on. And I think that right now, again, because of technology, you know, I emailed all my students. I had a list of my students and their emails, and that worked out great. The one thing that you, of course, do have to worry about when you send emails out is to make sure that they are correct. I used to always tell my students also, remember, if you send me an email, think of, would you tell me that to my face? You know, would you come up to me in my office and say, Mr. Nurse or Dr. Nurse, you're crazy on this. You know, so I think that's important too. So even using things like talk about this a little bit, Linda, ways of filing things, ways of using a color-coded system or tabbed entries. We're getting close to our time here, but talk about that a little bit, and then we'll close her up.
Okay, if you don't mind, though, I'd like to just kind of twist that slightly, because I think with accommodations, we are talking about the actual physical accommodation, and then we're talking about educating the person with learning disabilities or dyslexia to use that accommodation and educating people around them.
Right.
So, for example, when you were talking about color coding and you were talking about graphic design organizers and that kind of thing, I worked with a young man that was in a very high-powered company, and because of his learning disability, he wanted to take notes during the meetings. And so he started taking notes, and he was pulled aside by a supervisor and got his ass chewed out because he said, I don't know why you're doing this, but this is all private information. You should not be taking notes. And he had to explain that the reason why he was doing it was because of his dyslexia, he could not always read what was being passed out, and he could not connect that to what he was hearing. So sometimes you have to, instead of just doing the accommodation, you need to actually kind of lay the groundwork. And another woman that I worked with that was worked for actually a radio station in England, and she was the world's worst organizer. When she took into her boss, and you can't make this stuff up, she took into her boss a black plastic trash bag that was full of all the forms she had never filled out.
Oh, my gosh.
Because she couldn't fill the forms out. She just took the bag in and set it on his desk and said, okay, I'm really glad that you think I'm a good employee and that you like the work I do. But, you know, these forms are driving me crazy. I don't know how to do them. And here's all the ones I haven't filled out. The good part of that story was employer helped her to.
Linda, I'm going to have to cut her right now. And we're going to, we can, this is previews of coming attractions. We can discuss these in our next session. So just stay on the line here and. This is Dr. Steve Nurse.
Or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofashon.org and look under the Shows tab.